Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore dropped 50 on the Twitter sphere last night.
It was weird when Mello dropped. So, I'm upstairs. I'm doing some work. That's a lie. I was supposed to be upstairs working on transcription for this Corey Brewer thing, and instead I was playing a game
on
my iPad and not doing any work whatsoever. I'm like, well, okay, I'm obviously not getting anything done. I'll go down and I'll watch the game. And so I was like, oh, hey, Melo's having like a really great game. I'll go down and I'll check it out, and then I can write nice things about Mello, and maybe Knicks fans will get the hell off my back. And then like I go down, and the first thing that happens is he takes a contested jumper over Udonis Haslam instead of driving into the post on him, which he can do, or driving around him, which he can do. And I was like, what? And then on the next possession, he completely blows a rotation on Mike Miller, who was one of like the three Heat players having a good game. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was so infuriated. I was like, why is he only terrible when I watch? And then the second half happened, and I got to see him be awesome.
Yeah, it was just weird. And I wrote this on CBS. I was like, it was just a very weird 50-point game. Like, he didn't turn the ball over, which rarely happens in 50-point games. He didn't really have assists or rebounds. Like, he was just a shooter. Like, he didn't go to the basket. He had zero attempts at the rim. He didn't have any attempts in the middle of the floor at all. It was just a left or right side thing. And there were a lot of plays where he didn't even dribble. It was simply catch and shoot. Like, very Mello type game in terms of he would dribble into bad shots at times, but there were also a lot of shots where he just took what the defense gave him, and that's very cliche, but it was like, here's what defenses want to do now. They want to take away the basket, they want to make you make jump shots, and he was like, all right, I'll try that, and that's what he did. And it was just a weird way, like, to get 20 or 30 points like that would be odd enough for him, but to get 50 like that, that was just bizarre.
There were two comparisons I thought of. The first was, I thought, you know what? This is legitimately his Olympics game.
Yeah.
This is what he did. You know, it was LeBron or Kobe driving and kicking, and Mello would be the recipient, and he scored a ton of points in the Olympics because he accepted his role as, I'm a really great shooter. How about I shoot?
Yeah.
And he just shot. And
that's the thing.
He dislikes that idea. As I'm such a critic of his game. As long as he's shooting open jumpers, I'm never going to, even if they're mid-range, don't care.
And that's the thing. He is a great shooter. Like, he's not a great three-point shooter historically, but in terms of just catch and shoot, like, the guy can stroke the ball.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, he's one of the best pure shooters in the game, and there's simply no denying that. And when he makes it into high percentage looks, which, by the way, what the hell was the Heat defense doing?
Like, I feel bad for Shane Battier.
And he's open. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, he's the one guy you need to. He's got over half their points.
Yeah, I feel bad for Shane Battier. Like, Shane Battier defends him really well, but it just never matters.
And that's. I mean, it's like the epitome, right, of the whole argument of the All Star. You know, the No Stats All Star, and then I talked a lot about it in the thing I did on this year, writing about how, you know, you focus on the process. You focus on, okay, I defended him well.
Right.
You know, I contested the shot. He hit them because that's what great players do. And you have Battier around for a number of reasons, including to guard guys who aren't like that and for nights when he's not shooting that well. You know, because that's the danger is, you know, if Mello has an off night, he's still going to be taking all those shots. But I really, you know, I can't criticize because I'm just like, no, look, those are high percentage looks for him. If he'd shot terribly last night, that was still a great game for him, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those were all within the flow of the offense. And with the weird thing, it was just this weird middle ground of like, that's exactly what the Heat wanted him to do. And it was what the Knicks wanted him to do at the same time. You know, like they all had the same idea. It's just they had different expectations of the outcome.
Right. Now, some of them, like the wing threes on the rotation where the Heat just weren't getting there, was like, no, that you can't do that.
Right. That
is not advisable. It's just you guys are tired is the biggest part.
Exactly.
Did you see Battier's comment afterwards?
No.
Battier said, quote, it's an inopportune time for me to announce my defensive player of the year candidacy. Because I love Shane. And but what I was thinking of, it reminded me a little bit of Game 6 LeBron versus the Celtics, because it was one of the most amazing basketball games I've ever seen, in one of the, because of the context of the performance and what was on him and the way that his manner and the way he just destroyed him. But the other thing, and, is, and the Celtics wouldn't say this because they do have at least some respect for LeBron. They wouldn't say this, but I did see some comments that were kind of like, look, if LeBron's hitting the mid-range contested jumper, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's kind of the same thing where it's like, look, if he's knocking those down, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, there's just not a lot you can do there.
And with players that talented, you do have to, like, resign yourself to, this is the area we want them to shoot from, and if they make it, well, crap. That's what happens.
That's why, honestly, most years, there are exceptions. The year they lost to the Suns, a few. But for the most part, the reason the Spurs lose in the playoffs is that principle almost entirely.
Yeah.
Is, when you look back, they were stunned because they were like, wait, Marc Gasol can hit in the post? They didn't see that coming.
Right.
And, you know, and Zach Randolph, it was like, well, can we force him into a contested fadeaway jump shot? What are we going to do? And then last year it was, you know, Spurs fans were apoplectic because they're just like, what are we supposed to do if Kendrick Perkins is hitting mid-range jumpers?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Hell's freezing over. I don't know, you know, we have bigger concerns because the world's apparently ending because Kendrick Perkins is hitting mid-range jumpers.
Right.
And that's, and part of that's like the play, you know, I do subscribe a little bit to that. That's the playoffs and role players step up. Like Ibaka, they can't complain about. If they really didn't think Ibaka could hit from there, they didn't do their scouting well enough, which I doubt that's the Spurs.
Exactly.
I don't think the Spurs didn't scout it well enough. But I think also it's one where, like, yeah, and because Carl's talked about this too, and then who else talked to me? Byron Scott talked to me about this. Like, you have to prioritize defensively. You can't coach everything always. So you have to be like, okay, we want to prevent this shot, and then this shot, and then this shot, and then you go down the list. And it's like, well, the Ibaka mid-range jumper, like last year for the Spurs, was probably 6 or 7. And if they're consistently going to it and he's nailing them, you're just like, okay, you know. If he hits a few, it's like, okay. But then when he hits so many, it was like, well, crap.
I had this thought in that Bosch has been hit, or he has been hitting, like it's been 2 games, 3 games maybe, but he's like taking more threes and hitting more threes. I don't know that I like that shot for him at all. Like, I know he can hit it, but he's still like Dwayne Wade territory on three-point shooting this year. And I think that I'm a little afraid that he'll kind of, like, fall in love with that more and more. Not to where he's, like, taking 5 or 6 a game, but to where he's taking 2 or 3 a game, and I think that's a mistake.
Chris Bosh Puget threes.
Yeah, like, I just think that that's a – I think that's a mistake. And maybe I'm just overreacting to the last couple games because they haven't had, you know, Wade and LeBron, but I just figure – well, if anything, that should give you more room to operate in the middle of the floor.
Well, you know where that started was last year versus Boston. He came back and hit a few.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was, oh, hey. I think they like it from the perspective of when he hits that, it's demoralizing.
Oh, sure. It's almost always a big shot. Like, even like not even talking about the game winner, but it usually caps off a run or it ends a run. You know, it's almost always a big shot for them.
It's almost like a War of the Worlds type of thing where you start to believe like, oh no, they can't be killed. Their bigs can hit threes.
Yeah,
like, there's nothing we can do. It's like the fear of in like a zombie movie. They can't be killed. you know, Ibaka is shooting 33% this year on threes.
That's a terrible idea.
And they use it a lot. I think it's
They put him in the corner a lot.
I can understand from the perspective of, okay, if we make them respect this, then it's going to stress the defense out further, and then Russ has got more room to get to the rim and KD.
I mean, I struggle with this, but I really do understand the theory behind effective field goal percentage and factoring in that extra point. But if that guy's hitting 33% of those shots, he can have it. I don't care if it translates out to what, like 50%. Like, I'll take that all day.
And that's one of the things you gotta live with something, and that's part of the thing is I don't think it's gonna make anybody be like, oh man, we really gotta guard Bosch and not worry about LeBron driving to the rim.
Right.
You know, they're gonna be like, at some point against players of this caliber, you simply have to say, you know what, if we lose on this shot, we lose on this shot. We have to accept something.
Yes.
You know, and you talk about, no, contest every, it's not possible. The ball rotation moves. You have, if you're a great team, you can move the ball well enough to be able to create an open look for somebody. It just depends on who you get. I mean, that's one of the things. Like, the Heat will rotate, but if you guard it effectively, you end up with Udonis Haslem in space, and then Haslem tries to prove, I can still hit this mid-range jumper, and then he doesn't, and then, like, that's, like, your optimum situation.
Right.
That's, like, your goal.
Right.
Unless it's Norris Cole throwing it to the other team.
Sure. Which he is wont to do.
I did want to say, you know, we've talked a lot this year, and I've been on this whole thing about good wins and bad wins and good losses and bad losses. I thought this was a really good win for New York, despite the fact that Wade and LeBron didn't play.
Sure. I mean, at this time of the year, every win's a good win, especially when you're fighting for position. And yeah, LeBron and Wade didn't play, but New York needed the game. And it's a good one to work out for them.
Yeah, and it's, I think that there's a category of expected wins, which this should fall into because of the talent differential, but it still doesn't mean they could have, when they were struggling in the first half, I was like, this is clearly, they're just now not able to get up for this game because LeBron and Dwayne aren't playing.
Right.
And I think that's okay. I think, yeah, because I would be easy on the Heat in the same situation, because I was easy on the Heat when, like, KG was out and they lost to the Celtics. Like, I don't think the Celtics are a better team. I just think that, you know, Miami really, or Ron Rondo was out, rather. I just think that Miami was unable to get up for the game, and that happens. And it's good that they were able to come back and get this, because now they're, you know, it's really looking, they've got a really great shot not only to lock up the division, but I think that they've got a really good shot to get the two, which I honestly didn't think they were going to get. So,
this is
nine in a row for them, which is great. Now, some, I'm not big on all of their wins in this nine in a row streak, but nine wins is nine wins. So.
Yeah, it's a good streak. And at some point, this is a conversation for another day when we're doing awards, but Eric Spoelstra needs to get more credit for what he does. He just flat out needs more credit. Like, that guy is a great coach.
He's been my coach of the year on baseline the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's just, like, and it's not even just the streak. It's, he just has good preparation. He has good adjustments. He manages the game really well, and it helps having LeBron and it helps having Wade. I get all that, but he's also supposed to be their undoing, right? And if anything, he's become a strength for them. And he's a good coach. And some people are like, oh, well, was he a good coach before LeBron got there? LeBron and Bosch got there. It's like, well, he did win 90 games over the course of two seasons with Michael Beasley and Jermaine O'Neal as the second and third best player on the team. So yeah, I'd say he's a good coach.
Well, and also, I don't know any coach that does well with terrible talent. I just don't. I don't know any coach that does a legitimately great job that wins 50 games with horrible talent.
Right.
Just doesn't happen.
It doesn't. You know? It doesn't.
And it's one where I do buy into the idea of NBA coaching being less valuable than it is in other sports to a certain degree, but I also think that there are little ways in which people don't see that it's very important.
Right.
Like, you know, everything that Phil Jackson did. Speaking of Phil Jackson.
Hey, he talked.
He talked. I thought that was the We Want Phil chance for everything I wanted.
Yeah, it was. You just kind of wish that the Lakers had stayed out there for the ceremony.
And it's weird because it's not that I'm being vindictive against D'Antoni, because I'm a big D'Antoni guy. I feel bad for him. I just wanted kind of that moment of, because you know D'Antoni would just be smiling and shaking his head like, that's fine.
Phil's speech oddly centered around Shaq's nudity. Which that was just a weird way to go. It was a weird angle to take.
It was interesting because the whole thing was very much like fun oriented. Like, how much fun was everything? Boy, we had some fun.
Yeah.
Everything the whole night, which is, I guess, maybe kind of indicative of that era. Like, they really did. They just kind of, like, everything was easy and fun for them.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to, you know, I actually wanted to be cynical about the whole thing, but it was a pretty fun ceremony. Like, it was good. Like, I thought Jeannie Buss was great. I thought Kobe's message was good. He made sure to note Shaq's incredible physical talents and not necessarily anything about hard work, but, like, that was fun.
Yeah, my favorite moment of the Kobe video was, I know you play for other organizations, and he paused. And to me, there's, like, in my head, there's this parenthesis, unlike me.
Right.
But I mean, I don't know. People are giving me grief because they're just like, you're dead inside. And I was like, no, it was great. Like, I really liked where he. I love the stuff about the stepdad.
Yes. And yeah, that was great. And other than, like, I just can't stand the Can You Dig It? But I get that that's fun for Lakers fans, so it was cool. But I actually really like Shaq's speech. I thought it was excellent. I thought he was fun and charismatic. And, like, that's the Shaq I like. I don't like the BS posturing that he does on Inside the NBA all the time. Like, I want that Shaq. That seems like a natural Shaq to me, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, it really was. People were giving me grief. I mostly was unable to take it to be like, oh, it was such a, because everyone's like, this was one of the greatest moments in NBA history. Somebody said that last night, and I was like, he thanked Adam Sandler. That was my favorite moment of the entire night.
That was such a setup, because then it was, oh, by the way, Grown Ups 2 trailer.
I don't care. It's just the fact, like, outside of that context, I will always remember. Yeah. I will always remember, like, that Dwight specifically thanked his good friend Adam Sandler.
I want to thank Jack Nicholson and my good friend Adam Sandler.
He thanked Adam Sandler.
Oddly enough, I started watching. We made soup yesterday, like from leftover ham, and. Or as they call it in Arrested Development, hot ham water. And so, like, it had been cooking all day and stuff, and we're waiting for it to cool as I was going to bed. Like, I needed to wait for it to cool, and then I was going to put it in the fridge. And so I was just, like, killing time at 1 in the morning, and I scroll through the channels, and Jack and Jill is on. And I was like, oh, what the hell? I know I'm going to watch it eventually. Might as well start getting over it. And the only thing I could think of was, this is the guy Shaq thanked in his retirement ceremony. Yeah, or in his jersey retirement ceremony.
When I saw you tweeting about it, I was like, we may have to stage an intervention. This, I don't know if we can go much lower than Jack and Jill.
What's the low part of it is that I caught it like an hour into the movie and thought, well, I need to record the next showing. And so I did. I recorded the next showing so I could see the whole thing. So I'm not lost in the plot.
Do not let your lady friend check out the DVR.
Oh, no, I've got to get it off the DVR before she gets home today. That's for sure.
And I know that you didn't ask for it. I'm sorry, but when I went to the CBSSports.com homepage, scroll down, and it's just you talking about Jack and Jill.
That's going to be my only defense, is when they finally come to me and they're like, hey, about your Twitter account. And I'm just be like, I never said put me on the page. That's all I've got.
You're just going to link back to every time you've tweeted that. I never said to put me on that
exactly.
page.
Exactly. I should go favorite all those tweets.
That should help you tremendously.
Yeah.
When the head of CBS calls and is like, so why exactly is there a 2-hour conversation about Jack and Jill?
Hey, I retweet Kat Dennings. I'm a company guy.
You are a company man.
Yeah.
You're also, you know, you're also a very competitive man, so I wanted to get your thoughts, even though it's not NBA related, I want to get your thoughts on Mike Rice.
I saw like hours of people complaining about this Mike Rice situation and the things they were saying. And you know me, I tend to think people are overreacting. And I tend to think like, yelling at people, that kind of stuff, like, it's motivation, it's not a big deal, it's, you know, don't be so dramatic about it. Then I watched the video. My God, they didn't sell it hard enough on Twitter, which, that should tell you something. I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's not like, oh, we're a soft nation, or we're a soft culture anymore.
And you were the first to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think we are, but there's a difference between the parts where he, like, grabs a jersey and moves a guy to a different spot, I'm actually okay with that. Like, I don't think that's necessarily abuse. But he's throwing basketballs at kids' faces. He's, like, in the middle of drills. Like, he's kicking them. He's shoving them. There's a difference between grabbing a kid's jersey and saying, you need to be in this spot on help defense, and throwing a basketball at his head while he's trying to run a drill. And that's absurd. And the language, I don't think swearing at players is a bad thing as a coach, but when you start throwing out slurs like he did with a homosexual slur, Like, that's inappropriate. There is a line, and he crossed it so many times, and that's ridiculous, and that's not coaching. And I know nothing about coaching at that level. I was a JV coach for a year and a half, and it's very different, and I realize it is not even close to college coaching and the accomplishments he's had to get to that point. But I know that when I coached, I would never even dream of treating kids that way. And they're younger kids, so it's easier to think of them as children. But like, if you're a coach, you have to think of, these are my guys. I have to get them prepared. I have to protect them. Like, that, like, that's the mentality you need to have as a coach. And he seemed to go out there and think, oh, good, I can pick on these kids. I can bully them. I can abuse them. And there's nothing they can do about it. And I would, you know, it's a reaction everyone's had, but I would love to see him try that crap at the pro level.
There were a lot of arguments yesterday on who would be the best one for him. I said, I threw out a lineup of, everyone kind of was objecting to CP3 on the flop basis. I'm like, you guys do not realize how tough Chris Paul is.
Chris Paul would annihilate him.
You do not want to mess with CP3.
No.
He is a murderer when he gets on that floor.
Yeah.
Z-Bo.
Z-Bo and Perkins are probably my two, or Z-Bo, Perkins, and Ivan Johnson.
Like, Z-Bo's not going to go crazy on you. Z-Bo's going to be one of those. He's going to look at you. He's going to walk over to you. He's going to deck you once, and then you're never going
to
get up.
I don't even think he would do that. I think he would walk over to Mike Rice, and I think he would just whisper something in his ear, and you would see all the color in Mike Rice's face just disappear,
just vanish.
And I think it would be a very quiet practice after that.
Versus, like, Reggie Evans would be like, oh, no, it's fine, it's fine. And then all of a sudden would accidentally stumble towards him and then hit him so hard he got embedded in a bleacher.
Right.
So many guys. Tony Allen's another one.
Steve Blake would be a fun one.
Steve Blake. Everyone said Meta World Peace, and I don't know. Meta's...
Yeah, I don't think Meta would care.
And you just don't know how Meta's going to react to anything.
Yeah. Cousins would be fun.
You talked about it with the kids. I don't have any experience with this dynamic. I do know this, that at the college level, they are talked about as kids, and they honestly are kids. I remember being that, and you are becoming a man, but you're still very much, you're young. And the big thing is that relationship is built upon one of trust and dependence.
Yes.
You know, you trust and depend on your coach to take care of you, and in a lot of ways, I mean, that's a relationship. I was in three abusive relationships in college, and not severe through the entire period, but enough to where, you know, it left some scars on me, and it's still pretty upsetting. Now, I also, my friends make fun of me constantly about it.
Right.
You got your ass kicked by a girl, but it doesn't change the fact that
What are you supposed to do?
Right?
In that situation.
That was always my thing. I was like, you want me to hit her back? Because I'm not going to hit her back.
Right.
Not going to happen. The best part, though, one of them threw a VCR at my back.
Oh.
And it had Basic Instinct in it.
Oh, that's so apropos.
I know, right? Like, just...
You couldn't plan that better.
I couldn't script something like that.
Yeah.
So not to go into too weird territory, though, I think we've already gone there, just to say that you cannot take advantage of those relationships that way, and that can be really damaging for a kid's psyche, even though it's just his coach. He really does have a dependent thing on it. And my thing yesterday, I can't stand that we live in a culture where whether they're worried about their scholarship or transferring or looking like a bad teammate or looking soft, I can't stand that we live in a culture where this went on and those kids felt like they couldn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
That's messed up. We got to fix that. We can't have that. These kids got to be empowered. And, you know, everyone talked yesterday about how this comes down to the NCAA and how the exploitation. And don't get me wrong, I'm 100% on the NCAA exploits kids. They could be paying these kids, and it still would not be okay.
Right.
No one has the right to abuse you like that.
Right.
And it's not – he didn't beat the crap out of the kids. He shoved them and threw a basketball at their head. By the way, having been hit with a basketball hundreds of times in the head.
Recently. Summer League.
You're never going to let that go.
I'm never going to forget that. It was one of the – I mean, no offense, but it was one of the greatest moments of my life.
It makes me so sad. For those who don't know, quick story, I was in summer league, ball, a guy shot a three-quarters shot, I was turned the other way, leaned over a trash can riding something, the ball bounced and just smacked me right in the back of the head.
And I saw it happen the whole time. And I did think about saying something, but I figured, like, by the time I was going to say something, you would have turned and it would have hit you in the face. So I feel like I did you a favor.
Right, not alerting me and laughing at me was really the best thing you could have done there.
I think now we're talking about. Yeah, I think
he
now we're
using him, but there's still kind of dynamic there. We got to get to a point where this stuff, you know, isn't okay. And I mean, maybe it does take stuff like this to maybe get some change done. I think you can be an intense coach. I think you can be an angry coach. I think discipline is a really good thing to teach guys.
Absolutely,
think young men need it. But you know, there's got to be limits, and we have to be able to say we have to define as a culture what we decide is okay and what is not okay. And I'm glad that you know almost everyone is unilaterally. Well, so at least some outside of the worst parts of humanity have responded with, this is not okay, we can't allow this.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we do refer to them as kids, and people say, oh, they're adults. They're not kids, but they're not adults either. Like, I don't want to burst the bubble of anyone in this age range that is listening, but if you're between the ages of 17 and, like, 22, you have no idea what the world is. You just don't. I barely have an idea, and I'm 31. I have a minuscule idea of what the world is. Like, you just don't know what is correct and what is incorrect. Like, there are some moral and immoral grounds that everyone basically has. But in terms of how things are supposed to go, you really have no idea.
I think about in terms of, like, being the Back to the Future, like, heavy.
Yeah.
Like, 15 to 20, not heavy at all.
Right.
20 to 25, not really very heavy. 25 to 30 is kind of heavy. I'm at 31 now. I'm going to be 31 in May. And I can tell you, so far, the 30s have been really heavy. The 30s are looking like a heavy decade. Yeah. So.
But yeah, and that's the thing. It's not an issue of softness or toughness. It's an issue of would you want him doing that to your kid? And there's some parents that are very overprotective. I can tell you I'm not going to be overprotective. Like, that's just not in my nature. But that still wouldn't be okay.
What did they do Dallas Lakers last night?
poor Dallas. That's it for them. They're done.
3.5 is with the tiebreaker. It's 3.5.
Yep,
that was my thought too.
Yeah, they're done. That was their last chance at the playoffs, and the loss just ended it.
You would need such an epic collapse in the last four games from both teams.
We've seen Utah and we've seen the Lakers go on collapsible runs, but
both of them at the same time.
Yeah, both of them at the same time while you're surging with Mike James as your starting point guard. I don't see it.
And Chris Kaman. That's the weird thing is I loathe the fact that James is starting on this team, and I still think that he's a more quality starter than Chris Kaman.
Oh, for sure.
He hit that mid-range jumper last night, and he took like three more, just like you said. And they're at rim defense. It's frustrating because I keep thinking, like, man, how good would this team be if it had a rim protector? And you just keep getting back to Tyson Chandler. Like, I don't want to keep going back to something that happened, you know, it's going to be two summers ago. But, man, they could use Tyson Chandler right now.
Well, even, like, Chris Kaman just isn't a rim protector. Like, he's skilled as a basketball player. He's not someone who is horrendous at his job. However, he doesn't excel at his job, and if you need rim protecting, I'm not – you and I have argued about this player before. I'm not a Brandon Wright guy. I don't think he's very good, but he has the threat of protecting the rim. Like, Bernard James has the threat of protecting the rim. Like, I would just throw those guys out there and see what they could do for heavier minutes.
Yeah.
Hell, even Elton Brand is your center. Like, you're undersized, but he's a better rim protector than Chris Kaman.
So, and, you know, and the Lakers played well. I thought that...
Yeah, for, oh, for Blake, sure. Kobe
Steve
was
Blake
great.
Steve was inconsistent, but played marginally well. Kobe was fantastic. I don't have any more... It's really weird, because if you don't talk about it, you get labeled with the hater tag, and it's just, man, what am I going to tell you? You don't know about Kobe.
Yeah, exactly.
Guy's amazing.
Yeah, this he's season. Really good. He was great. Dwight was great. Earl Clark was frustratingly great.
I didn't bring it up.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, I'm watching the game. I'm like, all right, he's – like, that's a play he probably can't make consistently, but he was making plays. And it's like, ugh, what can you do? He had a great game. Like, not just a good game. Like, he had a really great game. I don't think he'll consistently do that, and I think he's going to trick someone into paying him a lot of money this year. But
total Laker contract.
But good on him.
This is going to be an amazing ex-Laker contract year for Earl Clark.
The only thing I'm sad about with the current CBA is not everyone can give the full mid-level anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's going to make those Laker contracts that you've coined, it's going to make them less severe. Still hilarious, but less severe.
I think we just have to manage our expectations. Like, when he ends up getting, like, 4 years, 28, that's going to be hilarious.
Oh, you're thinking it's going to go that high.
Here's the thing with the ex-Laker contract. The ex-Laker contract does not operate within the realm of sanity, because what it involves is a player plays exceptionally well for the greatest franchise in the history of the NBA, often in a playoff setting, and then translates that combined with it's alchemy. You have to combine that with a desperate mid-market to small-market team that has lots of cap room and is desperate to get above the salary floor and thinks that they can find somebody who's a real asset that nobody else is looking at.
Yeah.
Now, Houston did this last time, and Houston's a pretty smart crew. But Morey made a horrendous mistake with the Trevor Ariza deal.
See,
and that's what we're going to be looking at. They're going to end up – somebody, I think, like Phoenix, New Orleans, one of these teams is going to be like, oh, but think about what he could do for us. And they're going to give him like – 4 years, 28, 3 years, 21. Even I wouldn't go any higher than – I would not go any higher than 315.
Here's the thing. I was thinking 3 years, $9 million was going to be hilarious. I would just think giving him three guaranteed years is ridiculous. So your expectations have far exceeded mine.
I feel very confident that if he continues to play like this, if they make any playoff – even if they push it to six or seven games in the playoffs,
yeah,
that – age, athleticism, everything, even though he's not particularly young anymore, he's still going to wind up. I still feel like his total deal value is going to be eight figures. I just do. I don't believe that the CBA can root out all of the idiocy in terms of NBA contracts.
No, there's still going to be some.
Yeah, it's going to be wonderful. That's one of the great things about the NBA is us getting to complain about how stupid teams are when they give people money.
Unless it's your team giving Darko Milicic $20 million.
Would you rather – here's a question. Would you rather have Earl Clark 3 years, 21, or Michael Beasley 3 years, 18?
Contraction.
Try answering.
Oh, my God. Would you rather have your father murdered or your mother murdered? Like, that's what I feel like the question is right now.
Are you telling me that Beasley versus Earl Clark is Sophie's choice to you?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I guess I would go with Earl Clark. Am I covering the team? Because I really enjoyed talking to Michael Beasley.
Let's do games.
I enjoyed that he had an iPad that was just for Angry Birds. At least at the time, that's all he used it for.
The Bucks are 5.5-point favorites versus your Timberwolves tonight.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Timberwolves are playing well.
Sure. No, they are.
I'm taking the Wolves there. Taking the Wolves. Bucks are more mediocre than I give them credit for.
I don't know that I like the matchup.
Portland is on the verge. A loss by Portland and a win by Utah eliminates Portland from playoff contention. I've started calling it the dark magic number. Their dark magic number is 2. They are 4.5-point dogs tonight versus Memphis.
Yeah, I like Memphis there.
They're at home, but I feel like Portland's kind of realized it, you know, without Aldridge.
Yeah, no.
Conley working on Lillard, I like Memphis there.
Yeah, if Aldridge is there, I'd take them to cover at least.
I've been fairly confident for the last 2 weeks that the Clippers were going to get either the 3 or the 4. That likely that I felt that they were strongly able to get the 3 because of Denver's schedule and the fact that the Clippers miraculously get the tiebreaker just by winning their division.
Yeah.
It's starting to look a lot more just because of the way that somebody was pointing out to me the schedule this morning. It looks distinctly possible that the Clippers could wind up with the 4 but not have home court.
Yeah.
I still feel like they beat the Grizzlies, which I'm just going to – that's Pepto whiskey that entire time.
They're not playing well.
Spurs are 14.5-point favorites versus the Magic. Now, that's obvious, but let's really think about this. Okay, no Manu. We don't know if Tim's going to play. We don't know if Kawhi's going to play. The Magic are tanking. 14.5?
Yeah. How much do I love Tobias Harris? I love him a lot.
If Duncan doesn't play, what can Vucevic do?
I mean, do you think he can battle the majesty that is Thiago Splitter?
I gotta start giving Thiago Splitter more credit. He really, his numbers are really good. I was watching some video of him. He's doing pretty well. I gotta bet on that.
That's the thing. His numbers are good, and he has played well. But I still look at him and think, oh my god, I would never want him on my team.
I know, that's my thing. I gotta get past it. I'm really trying hard, but they're also the Spurs' defensive numbers for the third year in a row are slipping hard at the end of the year. This is such a weird trend with them.
Yeah,
and it's, you know. And you could say, well, they don't really care because they know they're in the playoffs. But it's like, well, they've won. They've been in competition for home court and trying to fend off things with seed battles consistently. And two, you know, it'd be one thing, like, you know, one year, but it really feels like you could point to the injuries this year, and that's okay. But
they just keep having the same problems. I mean, they're injured every year, but maybe some of it has to do with sitting guys out more towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it, but I feel like they don't do that enough to warrant
the slide.
That big of a slide, although it does create inconsistency with your rotation, so maybe that's a thing, but it is a concern.
Yeah. The Celtics are favored by 7 versus the Pistons, who are apparently in full tank on mode.
So Paul Pierce is back.
Yeah.
Because that's
the only way. It opened 8.5, it's down to 7.
Yeah, I think I like the Pistons to cover there. 7's a lot of points for the Celtics team.
I'm gonna take Boston because I think what will end up happening is it'll be like the Celtics or the Pistons will make a run. It's a 5-point game, and then either Terry or Pierce or somebody hits a 3.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say then they'll put Rodney Stuckey back into the game,
and the ball bounces off the rim so hard it goes in the other basket.
Exactly.
The first person to inadvertently score a 3-point basket on the other team's basket.
Don't doubt that it can't happen.
The Kings opened as 8-point favorites versus the Rockets, and now they're 3.5-point dogs. I don't know what happened with that line.
So James Harden is playing.
You got to think.
That's got to be the only reason. I'll take the Rockets. Even though, I don't know, it's a big day for Sacramento.
Big day for Sacramento. I got my fingers crossed.
Very cool video put out by Videk. Is that his name? I can never pronounce their new hopeful majority owner's name. He's the chairman of the Warriors. I think it's Videk or Vivek. I think it's Vivek. But he put out a cool, like, Here We Stay compilation video of just, like, the whole situation. And it's, like, it's just a really great production. And watching that, like, I just, you know, I already wanted the Kings to stay, obviously. But I don't know. It was kind of, like, inspiring.
Clippers are 16.5-point favorites versus the Suns at home.
This is going to be the one. I mean, the Clippers, you've got to get on track against the Suns.
You got to win by like 50.
Yeah, this is a 60-point or bust win.
I like the Clippers. The Suns have had too many. Hey, we're kind of surprisingly okay lately. They've got they're due for. Oh no, wait, we're terrible.
Yeah.
They're sitting Dragic.
Dragic is still out with a lottery pick?
Yeah, he's still out with a lottery pick. It opened at 14.5 at 16.5 now. They give the Clippers another 2 points.
Yeah.
I love it when Vegas is like, well, you think they'll win by 15? Well,
let's go 17.
So, I like the Clippers. We got playoff picture up today, but just for those of you listening, Clippers win and a Warriors loss clinches the Pacific Division for the Clippers.
Yeah.
The Cavaliers are 5-point dogs to the Nets tonight. They opened at 1-point dogs. They're up to 5, so I guess Kyrie maybe not be playing.
Yeah, the Nets are good enough to where they should be able to cover that.
Yeah. Bobcats are only 5-point dogs to the Sixers tonight at home.
That is going to be one of the most unwatchable games of the year.
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, I'm very excited for Jeff Adrian versus LaVoy Allen.
Sure. Kwame up.
The Jazz are... Here's probably the game of the night. Jazz are 3-point favorites at home versus the Denver Nuggets.
Most important game of the night, but the Nuggets are going to roll them.
I'm taking the Jazz. Lawson. You know, without Lawson, I don't like this team. Carl got creative and played Fournier and had Iguodala run point last game, and that was really successful, which makes me think he's probably going to be like, oh, nope, back to Andre Miller for 40 minutes.
But you're forgetting the league needs the Lakers in the playoffs. So
yeah,
the conspiracy continues.
It'll be more exciting when they win on the last night of the season.
The conspiracy continues, though. That's just stupid. God, not everything is pro wrestling.
I think the league wants the Lakers in the playoffs, but they're not going to risk their entire business on making it happen.
Say what you want about David Stern, but he's not Vince McMahon.
No, he's not. McMahon has much better hair.
Right.
The Warriors are 7-point favorites versus the Hornets tonight. Tricky game.
That's a very tricky game. My instinct says to trust the Warriors. That has not worked out in the second half of the season.
Your instincts have been hurt badly.
My instincts have had me murdered by the wild many times in the second half of the season.
Your instincts were like me in relationships in college.
Exactly.
I'll take the Hornets to cover. I think the Warriors barely win and extend this thing for another day.
That's probably true.
Hawks are 2-point favorites versus the Knicks. Hawks are at home. Knicks are on a back-to-back.
10 in a row? I think I like the Hawks.
I'm taking the Knicks. They got to go ahead and wrap this thing up. They got to get the division. They can clinch no worse than 3.
Yeah.
If they can clinch no worse than 3, they can sit everybody and finally get the old guys healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll ride the Knicks until they lose.
Oh, by the way, we were talking about this earlier. Eric Spoelstra's done a fantastic job. Eric, for the love of God, let Shane Battier have the day off.
Just one.
Just give him 2 days. Give him today off and let him not play tomorrow.
Yeah, let him go to the museum or whatever he does.
He's playing long minutes. Let him go buy the iPhone, whatever newest gadget is out. I'm sure he's a big tech guy. I don't even know what the Samsung tablets are. Go let him buy something electronic.
Speaking of minutes... Thibs has found a new toy to run into the ground, and his name is Jimmy Butler.
Like, he doesn't give anyone that he doesn't trust minutes, and then finally you work your way into the rotation, and he drives you into the ground.
He's like, oh, you wanted to play? Now you're going to play. He's the kid that, like, gets a new toy, and he's like, oh, I wonder how many times I can slam it into the concrete until it breaks. Let's count.
It's amazing to me that the guys still play as hard as they do for him.
He's a motivator.
I don't really understand it. It's,
they believe
you talk
in him.
About the heart and the passion and everything, but look, I've seen coaches that are very fiery, and guys give up on them because they play them too hard.
The thing is, for some reason, is
able to avoid it.
The thing is that he's very fiery, but he's likable. Like, do you ever look at him, you know, yelling about defense or yelling about whatever in the huddle and think, like, oh, there's no way they respect that guy?
Yeah, it feels like he doesn't yell at anyone. He just kind of yells.
He yells, like, for the situation, but he's not saying, like, oh, you're a screw-up. You don't do anything for me. You know, it's not like a Doug Collins situation with Iggy, you know?
Right. Or even, you know, Popovich with Tony.
Yeah.
Okay. And finally, your Washington Wizards, which are, their dark magic number is 1. They cannot lose. The Bucks cannot win, or they are eliminated. But they are technically still alive in the playoff hunt. They're 4.5-point dogs on a back-to-back on the road versus Toronto.
Break up the Wizards.
I can't believe they're still eligible for the playoffs. That's amazing to me.
I was going to try to make a Voldemort joke there, but I've never read or seen Harry Potter, so I knew I was out of my league. But because he tried to break up Wizards, right? Isn't that that's the plot?
And he used dark magic. That actually wasn't a bad attempt by you.
Yeah, see? I can hang
it's
with
Voldemort.
The nerds.
There's a T on the end of it, but...
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant.
Maybe you're thinking about the Frenchman.
Yeah, no, you know, I took French in high school, so it just automatically goes to that.
There are 2 teams alive in the Eastern Conference that aren't in the playoffs currently, and it's only it's only Philadelphia and Washington. How crazy is that?
What's crazy is I feel better about Washington's odds than I do Philadelphia's.
Despite them being, they're 2.5 games back of Philadelphia, they are 5.5 games back of the Bucks.
Yeah.
Who take... an unbelievable meltdown by the Bucks for the Wizards to get in.
It sure would, but I like their chances better than the Sixers.
And there's only, you know, now there's it's just Lakers, Dallas, and Portland that are alive in the West.
That's our final game, right? Of the night?
Yeah.
Give me 2 minutes to sell you on the movie live. I know we've been talking
about this movie for the third day in a row.
I've finished it.
Okay. All right, go.
The first hour is awkwardly bad. Like, it's just a really poor attempt. Eva Mendes, she's a decent actress, but it just, like, her role is very forced. The roles around her are not very good. It's just really bad. The last 35 minutes of that movie is some of the most intense filmmaking I have ever seen. It's worth it just for the last 35 minutes. I was, like, on the edge of my seat, like, nervous. It's incredible.
Is it a spellbinding adventure?
I don't know that there's any magic in there, but it's a shot through the heart. I tried to make a gun reference there because it's like, you know, Russian roulette. It's a really, like, I think it's a very watchable movie, even with the bad first hour. Like, the last half hour, 35 minutes, it totally makes up for it, and it makes it something that I would absolutely watch again.
There you have it. Zach Harper's recommendation for Eva Mendes' Live.
That was probably never released in theaters in 2007.
Can we get your review of Jack and Jill real quick?
Well, I've only seen about 30 minutes of it on a very low volume, so I couldn't really follow along. But there is a scene where Al Pacino is trying to teach Jill how to play stickball in his living room. So there's that.
I need to find... I think we may have to have editorial start assigning you more stories.
Right? Just be like, hey, Zach, you got the 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. shift tonight.
The next time that you're like, I don't want to write on Brittany Griner, I'm going to be like, here's the deal.
That is the thing. If I'm left up to my own devices are terrible movies.
It's gotta be an NBA player on devices joke. Alright, thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Ben.